There is a tremendous leverage that the United States has, but of course, North Korea feels like it has already given up a lot.
The second Trump-Kim summit is about to begin in Vietnam. It's Wednesday, February 27th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the excitement of 5G technology is dampened by Huawei concerns. An Australian archbishop found guilty of abuses. The business of the Trump-Kim summit. Coming back from extinction, and a moment with Stonehenge. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump is in Hanoi for his second summit with Kim Jong-un amid hopes for a deal that would lead to the North Korean leader to give up his nuclear weapons. Trump received a red carpet welcome at Noi Bai International Airport, where white uniformed military guards marched into place on a cool and somewhat foggy night. Thousands of Vietnamese lined the sidewalks as Trump's motorcade entered the city, some waving small American and North Korean along with Vietnamese flags. National Security Advisor John Bolton 2 months ago said a second summit was needed because North Korea had yet to live up to the commitments it made last June in Singapore. A lack of a major breakthrough for the second time could have negative political ramifications for Trump. With me in the studio is Ira Melman.
Thanks, Jim. Joining us on VOA Asia is Bill Richardson, former governor of the state of New Mexico, former U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Ambassador Richardson has received 4 Nobel Peace Prize nominations, has successfully won the release of hostages and American servicemen in North Korea, Cuba, Iraq, and the Sudan. Ambassador, thanks for being with us again. The very reason that John Bolton, the National Security Advisor, said this second round of talks was needed is the reason that many say it wasn't needed. Are you one of those?
Well, I agree with John Bolton. North Korea has not lived up to its commitment since the first summit. They said they would start to denuclearize their missiles, their nuclear weapons, their weapons of mass destruction. And they've done hardly anything. They have proceeded with the return of some of our remains of our soldiers. They have stopped testing their nuclear weapons, but that's a commitment they'd already made. But when it comes to destroying some of their arsenal, they've done very little. They've blown up a couple of sites for PR reasons. And it's very important that the president come back with an agreement that at least partially destroys some of their nuclear arsenal, and that's doubtful right now.
Will that ever be the case? And what is acceptable as far as the United States is concerned, as far as you are concerned?
Well, I want the president to succeed. I think it's good that there's less tension in the region, but I want to be sure that the North Koreans live up to their commitments, which they didn't do in the Clinton and the Bush and the Obama administration. Nonetheless, it's good that the two leaders at the highest level are talking. But North Korea needs to take significant steps or a framework of negotiation, perhaps over several years, that in exchange for sanctions relief, they really will curb or destroy many of their nuclear arsenal so it doesn't threaten Japan, so it doesn't threaten South Korea. And until then, the sanctions have to be kept on. But Kim Jong-un, I think, has been underestimated. He has a vision. I just hope the president listens to his advisors, listens to his nuclear negotiator on North Korea, listens to John Bolton to make sure the North Koreans live up to their commitment to destroy their nuclear arsenal, which they did at the first summit in Singapore.
I don't think I've ever heard you say listen to John Bolton before, but I guess that applies now.
I'm rooting for John Bolton on this one.
Right. Well, you know, the very definition of the term denuclearization is still up in the air, as it's been up in the air since you were there last time and well before that, I would imagine. And that is the United States and the rest of the world seem to think that it calls for the denuclearization of North Korea. While many, we are heard, and you've spent a lot of time in North Korea, are saying that they are calling for the denuclearization of the entire Korean Peninsula.
Well, that's right. I think the North Koreans have a different definition, and we have a different definition With us, it's basically destroying the arsenal. With the North Koreans, their idea is, you know, doing little explosions at some of the missile sites, at the same time take certain steps like freeze their existing arsenal, which is not the same as eliminating their nuclear capacity. So this is where we are, big definitional cultural differences. But I think as long as we keep talking, even if this summit is not successful, and we keep negotiating, that's good for the region, for the peninsula, for Japan, for the United States, for South Korea, for millions of people that have been threatened by North Korea's nuclear arsenal that live right next to the DMZ and the region.
Do you believe President Trump when he says, I won't go as far as love affair, but he has a wonderful connection and a wonderful agreement in talks with Kim Jong-un? I mean, why do you think that? What in their personalities makes it so, do you think?
Well, they both seem to be very similar. They're autocratic. They're big personalities. I think the president overdoes it. This is a man that Kim Jong-un, who, you know, is accused of a lot of very horrible things. But it's good that they're both talking and getting along. The problem sometimes with my president, who I want him to succeed, is that he doesn't listen to his advisors and goes off on his own. And like with the first summit, said we're gonna end our military exercises with South Korea. This was a concession that everybody in the region thought was not a good concession to make, even his own advisors. So I worry the president goes in there, wants success. You know, he's having trouble with a Mueller investigation. He's having trouble with a shutdown, the emergency in Congress, that he'll do something that is not in our best interest. Nonetheless, there is less tension. There is diplomacy going on, and that's good.
Ambassador Bill Richardson, former governor of the state of New Mexico, former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, and the man who has done much to help this world get better than it has been. Ambassador, thanks for being with us once again.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
And, Ira, of course, one of the other key issues in the region is that U.S. strategic assets are there. Long-harbored desire for American forces to depart from South Korea is one of North Korea's hopes, possibly Japan, where the United States military has posted 75,000 personnel, maintains about 50 installations, and that doesn't include rapid response air and naval forces on the U.S. Pacific territory of Guam that Pyongyang also considers threatening.
And make sure you stay with us throughout this time, the next few days, because VOA, Voice of America, has many correspondents and producers and everything in Hanoi. Matter of fact, our newsroom looks empty. But nevertheless, they're all in Hanoi, and we will be checking in with them periodically.
Much more on VOAnews.com and VOA Asia Facebook. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit VOAnews.com. China watching, waiting for progress at Hanoi summit. Will Trump offer peace declaration as trade-off for North Korea's denuclearization? Rights group seeks path to accountability for North Korea rights abuses. Taiwan concerns mean China defense budget likely to defy slowing economy. American families of missing Uyghurs speak out at Washington, D.C. event. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. 5G-connected robots, cars, drones, and virtual reality gaming sets are among the thousands of futuristic gadgets on display at this year's Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, Spain. And while there is much excitement over how 5G networks will transform our everyday lives, The conference is overshadowed by the standoff between the United States and Beijing over the Chinese telecom giant Huawei, in which the U.S. says could be used by the Chinese government for espionage. Henry Ridgewell connects us with the details.
An early start at the Mobile World Congress. Time for a morning coffee served by a robot. The intricate movements are controlled remotely via a super-fast 5G mobile network. Even in this futuristic world, not everything goes to plan.
I screw it up.
5G technology is finally here, offering speeds of over a gigabyte per second and low latency. In other words, practically instant connections across networks. Experts say that opens up whole new fields of connectivity. Minute movements conveyed over 5G. The technology promises to transform not only the mobile phone in your pocket, but also the world around us, says Paul Triolo of the Eurasia Group, who spoke to VOA via Skype from the Congress in Barcelona.
But as you start getting into the really key aspects of 5G, like some of the low latency communications and massive sensor, massive machine-to-machine communications, that's more about industry and industrial uses, and that gets into things like critical infrastructure. So you're going to have a lot more sort of non-personal or industrial data flying around, and that really has people concerned. For example, it's the military forces and countries like the U.S., you know, will also leverage large parts of the commercial network.
The Chinese company Huawei is a 5G player. Washington has banned the company from 5G rollout in the U.S., citing Chinese legislation requiring companies to cooperate with the state, raising fears Huawei could be used as a Trojan horse to spy on rivals. Attending the Mobile World Congress, the State Department's Deputy Secretary for Cyber Policy, Robert L. Strayer, urged allies to do the same.
We will continue to engage with these governments and the regulators in those countries to educate them about what we know and to keep sharing sort of best practices for how we can all successfully move to the next generation of technology.
The eye-catching gadgets show the potential that 5G networks are about to unleash. But the question of who controls those networks and the data they carry looms large over this futuristic world. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Happening now in Asia, North Korean defectors surveyed by a Seoul-based human rights NGO say there are unlikely to be accountability for past abuses without complete change of regime in the North. Many say international courts should eventually have a robust role in trying those most responsible for victimizing ordinary North Koreans. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Cardinal George Pell, a former Archbishop of Melbourne, has been found guilty of child sexual offences in Australia, making him the highest-ranking Catholic figure to receive such a conviction. A court has decided that Pell abused two choir boys at a cathedral in 1996. Phil Mercer from Sydney reports he had pleaded not guilty.
Cardinal George Pell was found guilty in December, but because of legal reasons, the verdict can only now be reported. Pell was convicted of sexually abusing two altar boys in 1996 when he was Archbishop of Melbourne. He's always denied the charges. His trial was heard twice last year because the first jury failed to reach a verdict. A second jury unanimously found him guilty of five child sexual abuse offences. It rejected assertions from Pell's legal team that the allegations were fantasies made up by his accusers. One of the victims has issued a statement through his lawyer, Viv Waller.
Like many survivors, I have experienced shame, loneliness, depression and struggle. Like many survivors, it has taken me years to understand the impact on my life.
The verdict is a blow to the Catholic Church and to Pope Francis, who'd appointed Pell as Vatican treasurer. The 77-year-old Australian cleric is expected to be sentenced next week, and a jail term seems inevitable. He has appealed his convictions and is maintaining his innocence. A second trial, which involved accusations against Pell dating to the 1970s, has been abandoned after prosecutors decided to drop the charges. The news comes just 1 week after former U.S. Cardinal Theodore McCarrick was expelled from the priesthood after being found guilty of sexual abuse. Senior bishops from around the world gathered in Rome last week for an unprecedented summit into the sexual abuse crisis. Pope Francis vowed to end cover-ups and to fight sex abuse with the wrath of God. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, business concerns amid the Trump-Kim summit. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA programs. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia, relief swept across world financial markets after President Trump pushed back a March 2nd deadline in a trade dispute with China. But the respite might not last. The world's two biggest economies say they've made progress on trade issues, but have not provided much detail. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, business and economic concerns surround the Trump-Kim summit in Vietnam, as we hear in this edition of VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
South Koreans are worried about the economic impact of a potential U.S. troop withdrawal ahead of denuclearization talks between North Korea and the United States. Camp Humphreys, just 60 kilometers south of Seoul, is the U.S.'s largest overseas military base with 32,000 people, including soldiers and their families. Business owners there worry that if a peace treaty is signed between the two countries, North Korea will raise objections to the presence of U.S. forces in the south. Choi Eun-hee is the owner of a local kebab restaurant.
The U.S. military presence here is of paramount importance. At least 80% of the customers are U.S. troops.
Wednesday's summit in Hanoi is the second major attempt by U.S. President Donald Trump to denuclearize the peninsula. Since the first summit, relations have improved. North Korea has not fired any missiles or conducted any nuclear tests, and the U.S. has refrained from joint military exercises with South Korea. But North Korea has not taken any steps towards nuclear disarmament, and the U.S. hasn't eased economic sanctions against the country. At Camp Humphreys, people worry Trump might trade away the presence of U.S. troops in the Far East for concessions by Kim on nuclear weapons. The business owners who run the many restaurants, cinemas, schools, and nail salons here are worried about their future. Sungwoo Seok is the owner of a local nail salon.
If the U.S. troops withdraw, it'll turn the entire Humphreys neighborhood into a ghetto.
Trump has said that reducing U.S. forces in South Korea is not one of the things on the table at the upcoming summit, but he often complains about the cost of leaving those troops on the peninsula. South Korean business owners operating in Vietnam are hoping the upcoming Trump-Kim summit could lead to a breakthrough and allow them to go to the north where labor is cheaper. Choi Dong-jin is the president of the garment maker DMF.
When it comes to manufacturing, there was no place better than Kaesong because we could go in and make things in a day. We could also communicate better with the North Koreans.
Over 100 South Korean companies were ordered to leave North Korea after relations soured between the two countries in 2016. Many of those companies moved to Vietnam or Cambodia to survive, but are still struggling to stay profitable. They hope the upcoming summit will end sanctions on the North and bring the Kaesong complex in North Korea back to life. Kim Seo-jin is the managing director of the Corporate Association of the Kaesong Industrial Complex.
The deficits are piling up. That's why we want to get into the north as soon as possible to get rid of them.
At its height, the Kaesong plant employed about 55,000 North Koreans in South Korean-owned factories and generated around $100 million a year in currency for North Korea. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia, nearly 2 years after the Chinese government began to detain some of the 1 million Uyghurs, Kazakhs, and other Muslim minority groups in western China, a growing number of family members abroad are speaking out, including about 36 relatives at an event in Washington. There's more on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, reporting on the state of the world's wildlife can be dispiriting, but there are a few success stories. VOA's Kevin Enix reports on some winning strategies that have brought some species back from the brink of extinction.
In Thailand, it's a simple numbers game. In 2006, there were about 20 patrols a month in their tiger sanctuary, looking for poachers and recording the number of tigers in locations. Last year, there were 144 patrols a month. The result is that the recorded number of tigers jumped from about 40 in 2010 to close to 70 today.
In 2017, for example, there were ranger patrols doing about 4,000 kilometers of foot patrols every single month through the area. So to get this level of success, it actually is an enormous investment of time and money.
Elizabeth Bennett from the Wildlife Conservation Society says the Thai government is willing to make that investment in their tigers because they see the big cats as a source of national pride and tourist dollars. The tigers are part of a recently released list of 9 animals that have come back from the brink of extinction. Bennett says these kinds of success stories don't come easily and sometimes take decades and buy-in from local people to national governments.
Conservation, if we really work hard on it and we direct our efforts and our funding and our resources long-term in the right places and right ways, then we actually can save some of these species.
Species like humpback whales, which in some areas off the coast of Africa have bounced back to 70% of their pre-whaling numbers.
It's the end of whaling, and the International Whaling Commission, and the end of whaling of these species. And they're recovering extremely nicely, and a lot of species are recovering, so which is extremely encouraging that, you know, even with something that's as slow breeding as a whale, if you take the primary pressure off, they can come back.
And jaguars. These cats have lost much of their habitat, but in some critical Wildlife Conservation Society-controlled areas, they are increasing in number. A few other species that are heading back from the brink, the American bison. In Guatemala, the scarlet macaw. And these tiny toads, once extinct in the wilds of Tanzania, now slowly being reintroduced into their unique environment in the spray of a nearby waterfall. Wildlife Conservation Society officials say it's proof that with determination and time, some of the world's most endangered species can come back. It's a bit of good news in an increasingly bleak biodiversity forecast. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
The ancient quarries for Stonehenge have been located, as VOA's Rick Pantaleo takes a moment to explain.
This is Science in a Minute.
The prehistoric monument in England known as Stonehenge features megalithic stones that are arranged in concentric circles. The giant stone slabs that form the outer circle are sandstone and are thought to have been taken from a location about 30 kilometers north of Stonehenge. But inside that circle is one made of smaller stones known as bluestones. It has long been thought that the bluestones came from quarries in the Preseli Hills of West Wales, some 290 kilometers north of Stonehenge. An international team of archaeologists led by University of College London say they have found evidence of the exact locations of two of these quarries. Rather than being transported from the quarries to Stonehenge by sea as long thought, the stones may have been transported over land about 5,000 years ago. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We're happy to bring our program to you on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also catch it on VOA Asia Facebook as we stream it there every day, along with our website, voanews.com. You can also hear us on the radio, PSU Radio, Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand. We thank everyone there who's tuned in today. And, of course, we thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, John Ellison, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, that's Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.